Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and we have Paul Azinger on the podcast this week to talk about the Ryder Cup, and I know everybody is fired up about the Ryder Cup, but I actually had to redo the introduction to this podcast because of what happened on Sunday afternoon at East Lake, and we talked with Paul on Saturday morning, so of course Tiger Woods played well and he was in contention, and there was a chance he might go on to win for the first time in 5 years and the first time in 1,800 days. But, of course, we didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And since then, Tiger is a PGA Tour winner in 2018. And I will be the first person to line up and say I was wrong. There are stories I've written. There are podcasts I've hosted. There are tweets and everything out there media-wise where I said I'm not sure we'll ever see this again. And I am so happy to be wrong. That scene on 18 with all the crowd moving up, it looked like an Open Championship on steroids. I was nervous for a moment for Rory McIlroy. I was nervous for a moment at Tiger Woods. You know, Tiger had that face. He never looked around. He never changed facial expressions. It brought up, if you remember, when Kobe Bryant was guarding Matt Barnes and the famous gif where Matt Barnes kind of flexes the ball at his face and Kobe doesn't even flinch. It's my friend Kevin Stamler's favorite thing he's ever seen. It's one of my favorite things, too. And it reminded me of that a little bit. You know, it was what he wanted. It was this coronation of fans, buzzing, excitement. We can't believe this is going on. What the F just happened? Tiger finally is going to win again. It was literally one of the craziest scenes I can remember. Maybe the craziest scene I can remember outside of a Ryder Cup, which, of course, we're about to roll into. So think about what we just saw at the Tour Championship at East Lake. I was covering it for the PGA Tour live coverage. One of our featured holes was 18, so Billy Kratzer and myself got to walk him up that final hole and just kind of talk about it. It was honestly a little emotional in the booth. Kratzer and myself both, you know, as we're kind of talking about what is about to happen, you could see both of us, it hitting both of us, just like it hit a lot of fans. And, you know, I'm just really happy I was wrong because this year has been a lot of fun. I felt like Tiger deserved a victory for the way he has played throughout the season. His stats have been unbelievable. His stats look like a PGA Tour winner. It would have been a bummer for him to end the season without a win. And the way he drove the golf ball, it may be his best driving week that he has ever had, with the driver especially. You know, when Tiger was in his prime, he wasn't a great driver of the golf ball. He would miss big. He would miss wide. He would miss big. He would make big mistakes with the driver, and he would lean on the rest of his game to make up for it. And this week, let me just read off a couple of stats. Tie for third in driving accuracy amongst the field. Second in strokes gained putting in the field. Seventh in strokes gained tee to green. First overall in strokes gained. On Saturday, he came out and it was a man on a mission. And this is, of course, what we were used to seeing. We can bring up Tiger of old all we want. He used to do this kind of stuff all the time. He came out on Saturday and he completely took over a golf tournament with some of the best players in the world there. You could talk about limited field all you want. These guys are trying to win. These guys are trying to win a FedEx Cup because they know what comes with it. These guys are trying to win the Tour Championship because they're there and they're competing and they're competitive. And Tiger wouldn't allow it. And he did on Sunday what he used to do. He was there just hanging around and let everybody fall apart. It was crazy to watch. I know he's had chances this season to do it, and it didn't work out that way. I've talked a lot about how Tiger is going to have his A game to win, maybe even his A-plus game, considering the talent pool that's on the PGA Tour right now, and he had it. I mean, he rolled the putter as good as I could ever remember doing it. And the drives he hit, the drive on one on Sunday, absolutely striped, a hole that he infamously struggles on, opening holes of any golf tournament in any capacity. And on 18, he was starting to kind of see the wheels go, and he brought it back together and smoked the drive 340 yards right down the middle of a hole that's not the easiest to hit the fairway on. It was one of our featured holes on PGAtour.com. We saw plenty of players miss it way right and way left. Tiger didn't miss it all week. He stood up on the 18th tee and smoked the driver. He goes eagle birdie, makes that par on Saturday, which I know kind of was getting to him a little bit overnight and into that final round. And he comes out and he wins. It's his 80th PGA Tour title. And it was all the emotions I can remember having for a golf event. And we talk about comebacks in sports all the time. And, you know, say what you want about everything that's happened in Tiger's life, personally, whatever. I want to look at an athlete go through adversity, come out a better person, and become someone that we can root for. And to me, that's what Tiger is. This year, he's looked like a happier person. He's approached fans in a different way. He's talked to the media in a different way. At least this is my opinion, my thoughts on it. He has looked to bring in players. He has approached younger players. He's been friendly with them. He's been accepting of them. He hasn't pushed them away and been scared of their abilities or their talents or what they're going to bring to the game. And all of this comes together in the final event of the year. I mean, this is the final event that matters in terms of stroke play, and he wins it. And a hell of a job, I'll tell you. It was a hell of a job. It was so much fun to be a part of, like I said, with PGA Tour Live. And yeah, Tiger Woods now a PGA Tour winner in 2018. It's still kind of hard to believe. That's enough about Tiger. I mean, there'll be plenty more to talk about with him, I'm sure. We have such a long conversation with Paul Azinger about the Ryder Cup that I want to get to it, because it is one of my favorite podcasts that we've ever done. And before we get to it, I just want to bring up Ogio, one of our favorite sponsors, and remind you that when it comes to golf equipment, we always want a new driver that can hit the ball like we just saw Tiger do, a ball that goes 5 yards further. We might want new shoes. The one thing that never gets enough attention is the one thing that you use on every golf shot. That is your golf bag. And if you haven't changed your bag in 5 or 10 years, treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. It's fully loaded with all the features you want in a golf bag, yet it's unbelievably light. I love carrying it. You can carry it effortlessly while also protecting those brand new clubs of yours. It's complete with a water-resistant pocket for your valuables and a rapid access pocket, making it very easy to grab golf balls or even your water bottle if you need to. Check out Ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on the Cirrus today. Stop carrying around that old golf bag you've had since the 1990s, that you've had since high school. It's time for an upgrade. Check out Ogio.com. Ogio, the world's best bags. All right, Tiger won. The Ryder Cup is this week. Golf is in an unbelievable place. Let's get to Paul Azinger. And we welcome into the podcast one of my favorite people in golf, and also somebody that I feel like doesn't get the credit he deserves as the original Captain America. Patrick Reed needs to pay you royalties, Paul Azinger. Played on four Ryder Cup teams, of course, the winning captain in 2008. And Zing, we were talking about it before we got going here. I'm not sure there's been a person that has had more impressive teammates over the course of a Ryder Cup career. When you look back to your original one and your last Ryder Cup, you played with some of the best players of all time in this thing.
You got that right, and played against them as well. I've had Tiger for a partner. We lost. First match out, Freddie for a partner. We lost. I had Payne for a partner. Loser. I had Curtis for a partner. We lose. I've had some good partners to lose with, but also I have memorable Ryder Cups because I drew their best players all the time. It was, you know, it's a fluke. We submit our envelope, they submit their envelope, you open them up and see who you draw. And I feel like I just got really lucky because I drew all their superstars. I've played Seve and Jose several times, Faldo and Woosnam several times, Colin Montgomery several times. And, you know, that's what Ryder Cup's, I guess, a part of what it's all about is being able to pair well against two guys that probably are pretty paired pretty well, and everybody's fairly red hot. There's no place to hide at the Ryder Cup. The new selection process gets the best players there, and it's just a stellar competition.
Well, my first question for you is, at what point in the season as a player did you start to think about the Ryder Cup? And when I say think about the Ryder Cup, I'm talking about approach to the golf course that you guys are going to play, or who you'd want to play with on the team, and talking to the captain. When does that start during the season? I guess, you know, just for you in general.
For me, it was always after I formally made the team. Then I played alternate shot at home with my friends. Every putt, every tournament, you know, leading up to the Ryder Cup, I thought about in practice and all that, if this was the Ryder Cup. If, you know, it's like, how many putts have you ever made to win the Masters or the U.S. Open when you're out messing around?
Right.
Well, we all did the same thing. And but I did that at Ryder Cup. As soon as I was formally qualified for the team, I started putting myself in Ryder Cup situations. This is to win the Ryder Cup, or this is not to lose the Ryder Cup. And that's kind of how I thought, so I could just be mentally ready. This whole era of, you know, ignoring the burden or ignoring the pressure and all that, I think it's a Band-Aid, and it's not real. The reality hits when you get there. You know, in 06, I think those guys talked about how much fun they have in the tea room, and that was the priority, and they were all drinking and dancing on tables and the whole nine yards. And then Friday morning rolled around, and Furyk said he looked at everybody, and he started looking in the eyes of these players, and he just said, "We're in big trouble." That's not the way to prepare for a Ryder Cup. The way to prepare for the Ryder Cup is to out-prepare the opponent. And I sold to these players, you know, you guys are professionals. You got your name on your bag. You all know how to shave at this point in your life. I'm not going to tell you how to prepare. I'm just going to ask you to prepare. Prepare together. Come up with a philosophy and a strategy and get after it. But if you're going to try to pretend like it doesn't exist, well, then you're just not dealing with reality. So I really started hitting shots, an alternate shot with my friends at home, and I literally, every putt was something for the Ryder Cup. And it really happened as soon as I officially qualified.
Would that affect your play in tour events? I mean, did you ever feel like you played worse or better as you got into that mode?
No, not necessarily. I was choking to play better and could play worse. And you know, choking isn't in your hands. Choking's in your head. You know, if someone's choking, it's like this insult that his hands are shaking or something. But in reality, you're choking in your mind. You know, the golf swing, I said it a million times, it takes a second and a half, maybe 2 seconds. And when you back out of a shot or flinch on a shot, it happens at the very last second, because if it happened any sooner than that, you would have stopped your swing. Isn't that right?
Right.
So it's the same with Ryder Cup somehow. You got to get in there and just be ready for the situation. And I don't know, if you're not preparing to make putts to win a Ryder Cup or to win a U.S. Open or to win the Masters, then you're not preparing correctly.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the big knock on the Ryder Cup teams pre-08. I mean, and this isn't a knock to the captains of those teams, but almost maybe some of the leaders of those players. I mean, you know, Phil Mickelson famously changed club companies and went into the Ryder Cup with new clubs. The whole thing happened with Tiger and Phil, and Phil's out on the other golf course playing the Nike ball, trying to prepare and get a feel for that. I mean, it did seem like before you became the captain in 08 and changed a little bit of the philosophy, and then these players bought into the philosophy, it felt like as a fan, and especially when you go back and watch those events, that the American team kind of showed up because they had to, and now they get, you know, I mean, look at these guys. These guys use their yardage book from the Ryder Cup for 2 years. Keegan Bradley at the Tour Championship is still using his Ryder Cup yardage book. I mean, he's obviously not on the team this year. I mean, this philosophy has changed on the American side. I feel like it's always been there for the Europeans for whatever reason, but it's changed on the American side. It used to feel like an exhibition for these guys, and it was almost a pain for them. And now it feels like it's exciting for these guys, and they can't wait to get there.
Well, my first Ryder Cup was in 89. We lost in 87 at Jack's course. Jack was the captain. 85, before that, the American team won down in Palm Beach. But here came this new cast of characters, Seve and Faldo and Lyle and Langer, and, you know, all these remarkable Hall of Famers were about to show up and burst on the scene. And they did. They burst on the scene really in 87 and took the Ryder Cup on American soil for the first time ever, I think. And then you know, then comes my era, and we get after these guys. But I think the difference in us and them is that it's in our head. We think about the Ryder Cup all the time, but it's in their heart. It's in their blood. It's different for them somehow, because they've always been kind of the weaker tour or the weaker Ryder Cup teams all throughout history. And then suddenly in the 80s, that all began to change. And it's really in their blood. They're bonded by nationality. They're bonded by, you know, the Spaniards will play together. The Irishmen play together. The Englishmen play together. The Swedes play together. That's just the way it works. We're not the Floridians and the Texans and all that. We're just the, you know, American team. My philosophy was to take that large group of 12 and break them into small groups of three groups of four, and get those guys to bond like Europe bonds naturally.
Right.
They bond naturally by blood. We had to manufacture it, and now we've created continuity since 08. And Corey ignored it, Watson ignored it, and they got beat badly. Davis adopted that philosophy. He and Mickelson went all in on that, and they almost won in 2012. They should have won. They lost in singles because the ghost of Seve got in there and paid him a visit. And then But since then, that philosophy's pretty much been in place, and I think Furyk's doing it as well. And the idea, it makes it easier to pair when you're never pulling anybody out of your four-man group. It makes it easier for them to practice and the whole nine yards. And all these years, Europe had this continuity on us based on blood, and they have assistants that are future captains. We got all this in place now, and it really all did start to happen in around 08.
Well, I was going to ask you about Furyk. He's captain in the Ryder Cup team for the first time. I mean, how many conversations have you guys had? How many times has he reached out to you? And what's the advice you give to these first-year and first-time captains?
Well, he's reached out to me just a couple times. We've had dinner together. And just my whole thing with Furyk really in the end was just to control the controllables. You know, whether you're a captain or in life, really, you try to control the controllables. The thing that I think I wanted Furyk to understand was that there was no shortcut to success in a Ryder Cup. You're not going to hope for it. You're not going to wish for it. You have to get prepared. And if we show up as 12 guys looking to have a great time with each other, because that's what 12 guys do, and not come in there with this this burden of preparation, and you know, they're going to get walloped. And I just don't see that happening. We have really the generational pedigree. I should say every generation has their pedigree. This generation's pedigree is they're all on the team.
Right.
I don't know who you could pull off our team and put on that team to make it stronger. And I just feel like this is our time. We have an opportunity to do something that hadn't been done since 1993, and that's a win on foreign soil.
Yeah.
These guys are the pedigree.
And, Paul, I wanted to ask about 93. I mean, that's the last time the United States has won on a European soil. You were a part of that winning team. And what do you feel like makes it so difficult for the Americans when they go across the pond? And what I find the most interesting as I look back over the years of the losing American sides when they played on European soil was it's not like these golf courses are all links courses. I mean, it's not like you go over there and you're playing the Old Course and, you know, Royal Troon and these types of golf courses. A lot of them are parkland golf courses like they play in the United States, yet it seems like every time America goes over there, it's a loss.
One advantage that Europe has on us in over there is that they play courses the players are familiar with. They play courses that are on the European Tour. We tend to go to places like Medina or Whistling, you know, not Whistling, that's next time, but
Kiowa or Oakland Hill. I mean, you know, these types of golf courses that are only major venues once every 20 years, right?
That's right. And so when you play, if you go play, I don't know, the Honda Classic at PGA National, where they've had a Ryder Cup before, and it's a regular tour event, you just know where all the flags are going to be cut.
Right.
And Europe knows where all the flags are going to be cut when they get to these courses, and they know how to, they just, it's just a nice little edge that you're supposed to have, but we don't ever take advantage of that edge. It's more we don't take advantage of that versus they do. But when they're in Europe and they're playing on courses they're quite familiar with, that's a nice little edge. And I look at Ryder Cup like Vegas or like blackjack. You know, the house has a 1 or 1.5% advantage if you play perfectly, and they build giant casinos on a 1% edge. And I look at this Ryder Cup team and I think this is pretty even, and it's almost razor thin, isn't it? So what are you trying to do as you're the captain? If you're Jim Furyk, you're trying to control the controllables. You're trying to create a 0.5% or a 1% advantage. It's all you can hope for, and it's little things that get that done. And then when that bell rings on Friday, that's when Furyk's going to realize, holy crap, I have no control.
You were a captain. I mean, you did as much for the American squad in terms of disrupting what was in place, and that was the pod system, and that was putting four guys together and making sure they play together all the time. How hard was it as a captain to know that your job was simply, once this thing started, was to put teams out there in the morning and the afternoon, and then after that, you were basically a glorified cheerleader. You didn't get to hit a putt or hit a shot. You had to go out there and pump the guys up that needed pumping up. But how hard is it to sit in that golf cart as a captain, knowing that it really, at the end of the day, it's up to these guys to hit the shots and make the putts?
Well, you have a lot more influence than like a Davis Cup captain in tennis or
right.
something. I can't imagine how they're going to build in strategy and philosophy and all that. So as a captain, you know, I came in with an outside-the-box philosophy that got the players who'd been used to getting slaughtered and, you know, beat quite badly, got them engaged in the process. And I think Furyk's responsibility is to keep them engaged in their preparation. And then once the bell rings, there's not a whole lot you can do. You know, you just watch. You have to have an encouraging word periodically. I tried to focus on the players' personality types, and I tried to communicate with each individual player according to their personality. I didn't let my personality override anybody's personality. And I've talked to Furyk about that. You got to know the player, and you got to know what to say. If you walk up to one guy and say, you know, come on, man up here, what are you doing? He might react. Like, I'll give you a couple stories real quick. Anthony Kim, he's a go-getter. Him and his partner, Mickelson, were down early in the match, and they stayed down until they got to 14 or 15, and AK an alternate shot airmails the green, and Phil's got almost no shot. I hadn't seen him since the first tee, so it's been a little over 2 hours. They're on 14 green. I walk under the rope, and I look at Anthony Kim. And he looks back at me, and I looked away from him, and he goes, what's the matter? And all I said to AK, I said, bro, I thought you were going to show off for me today. You're showing me squat. That's all I said. And he laughed at me. He goes, relax, man. We're not going to let these guys beat us. Mickelson flops it up there a foot, and they went on to have the match. But I can't say that to Stuart Sink.
Right.
I thought you were going to show off for me today. You know, it has to be an encouraging word to Justin Leonard. Not, I thought you were going to show off for me today. But for Anthony Kim, it was, hey, man. Thought you were getting ready to show off. You know, that's the difference in just kind of knowing who they are. You encourage one guy, you challenge the next.
Well, a lot has been talked about with this American team, and you mentioned 1989 a little bit, and I was looking through some of the historical Ryder Cups, and I didn't realize Raymond Floyd said this, but before the event, he said, quote, the 12 greatest players in the world are on the American side, and obviously that fired up the Europeans. How much or how little does it matter how good these teams are on paper when the matches actually get going?
Tom Watson handed us all a little copy of something that Seve said when we were all on the Concorde flying from New York over to Europe, and Watson he had taped to all of our assigned seats on that plane. Quote from Seve saying that the United States team was going to use a high dollar courier service to bring the Ryder Cup back to Europe. And Watson had that taped on our chairs, and it fired us up. And so what Watson did was he calculated the amount of hours we would be in Europe, and he posted it on his door. And every 24 hours, or every time he walked in the room, he would change the number, and it kept getting smaller and smaller. And the European guards on each end of the hallway kept noticing the number but had no idea what it was. And when we got done, we win the Ryder Cup in 93, and Watson comes on the plane last, and he was staying that week to play a tournament in Europe. And he said, what time is it? Because we had calculated the time that Ryder Cup would be there, and he held up the Ryder Cup, and he held up a big zero, and we all just cheered and went bananas. It was a great theme for that Ryder Cup. It just was.
I want to take a quick break with Paul to let you know that Titleist has come out with their TS2 and TS3 drivers, and they're unbelievable. And you can get fit for them. And let me tell you, it is absolutely worth getting fit, because I went through the entire experience, new shafts, shaft links, adjusted the driver, figured out which one fits my game better, and I landed on the TS3, and both drivers are unbelievable. And the fairway woods are great. You're going to want to give them a chance, because you're going to pick up speed. The Titleist Golf Club R&D team has found speed from every detail of the driver, and now they're ready for you to experience Titleist speed. I picked up 13 yards with my driver. I increased my ball speed. And you don't just listen to me. Get fit yourself. You can find driver fitting locations now on Titleist.com. And stay tuned, because we have a sweepstakes coming up very, very soon. The great people at Titleist are going to give me some of the free drivers, and I'm going to give them away to you so you can experience what I experienced. You can pick up distance. You can pick up ball speed. You can hit it past your buddies. All of these things are really, really good, and it's going to make your experience not only on the golf course, but around the golf course and at the 19th hole a lot better. So check out Titleist.com to find a fitter near you. And be ready for a sweepstakes coming out very soon so you can land one of these new TS2 or TS3 drivers. All right, back to Paul Azinger. It's just so interesting that, and I've seen, you know, Vegas sets odds, obviously. Everybody sets odds these days. But, you know, we have this United States team that has these unbelievable players. And frankly, I mean, if you look at the world ranking numbers, this team is unbelievable. I mean, the two guys outside the top 20 are Tiger and Phil, and obviously Tiger's been playing great golf as of late. You know, it's you go into this thing and you look at the players and you go, how can this team get beat? And I feel like fans sometimes forget that in between the ropes, it doesn't matter, especially with match play. I mean, if you look at the WGC Dell Technologies match play, you know, Søren Kjeldsen can beat Rory McIlroy any day of the week. I mean, you know, match play brings it closer together, and I feel like the Ryder Cup brings it even closer together. You opened the show mentioning some of the guys you've played with, and you guys have gotten beat by players that most people on this podcast maybe never even heard of.
You got that right. And then you got, you know, the European team is strong. You know, Molinari's proven how good he can be. Justin Rose, he stands on his own. But look at somebody like Tyrrell Hatton. Who's ever heard of Tyrrell Hatton?
Right.
You know, we have because we cover golf. He's never played in a Ryder Cup before, but everybody knows Tyrrell Hatton can play. And now you got Tommy Fleetwood, who's never played in a Ryder Cup before. Tommy Fleetwood will beat you to the ground. Same with John Rahm. He'll beat you to the ground, no Ryder Cup appearances. This is a heck of a European Ryder Cup team. Then you get guys like Alex Noren, no Ryder Cup appearances, but he almost won the match play this year. You were right about Thorne. How do you say that name?
Thorbjørn Olesen.
Yeah, I'm just going to say Olesen from now on if I had to cover that. Poulter's a thoroughbred on their team. Then you get guys. So here's your veterans, the kind of the picks. It's Poulter, Stenson.
Sergio.
Paul Casey, Sergio. Those guys can beat anybody any given time. And when you have that momentum going over there in France, if there's momentum, it's like the wind, bro. You can't see it, but you can feel it.
Well, Zing, you are one of the few people in a Ryder Cup that has played as a teammate with Tiger Woods. You did it in 2002. You mentioned you guys were first match out on Friday and you guys lost. How much pressure did you feel playing alongside Tiger back in that time when Tiger was Tiger Woods, if you will? And what advice would you give somebody this week that's going to be paired alongside Tiger Woods?
Yeah, Tiger's is just all business. We weren't a perfect pairing because I was still playing well enough that, you know, I don't know. I just felt like Tiger, if he's paired with somebody that he thinks can be a threat to his legacy, I just don't think it's that great a matchup. But when you put him with someone like Chris Riley, and somebody that's not going to be a threat to his legacy, it's game on. But you put Tiger with Mickelson, what's Tiger going to share with Mickelson? Nothing. Why would he? Why would he share anything with Mickelson? Those two are they're adversaries, you know. Now it's different. Now they're older, and maybe they won't be adversaries. But I think playing with Tiger is more difficult because you realize when you see his record, how does Tiger have a losing record in team competition? Because whoever his partner is isn't as good.
Well, how did you play? How did you play alongside him that day?
I played great. I made six birdies. I didn't hit it great. I wasn't hitting it that well, but I made six birdies, and we were one down going to 18, and I hit 7 iron a foot. So, and then Thomas Bjorn made about a 20-footer to win the match after I was conceded my birdie. And I saw him at Augusta this year. And Thomas Bjorn, their captain. I said, I still haven't forgiven you for making that putt.
But that, you know, it is crazy, and I think about this, you know, along all the professional ranks. I mean, at the Masters, the U.S. Open, you know, you see these players that step up in the moments they have to step up and, you know, make big putts to win a major championship or make big putts to win a tournament. And, you know, you look back at the last Ryder Cup and the Rory versus Patrick Reed match where they're making these bombs and covering birdies, and it was crazy. And I just find it amazing that amongst all the noise out there, these professional golfers, you included, of course, can find a way to block it all out and still do the job, because it has to be so hard not to look around or hear the chants or think about all that's going on. And I always think about that with rookies. What would you tell the rookies on your team to keep them in that moment, to not get too ahead of themselves? Because this American team has a whole bunch of rookies.
We had six. Half our team were rookies in 2008. And I just, you know, I gave them all the credit they deserved as players, and qualifiers for the team. And I didn't treat any rookies any differently than anybody else. It's really the whole no shortcut philosophy, coming up with a strategy, how to play the course, who do you think should be an alternate shot, who should be in best ball in your pod, they all chose that for themselves. These guys really did own the team. And there's really no such thing as an actual rookie. Never having experienced something like being in the last group of a major doesn't mean you can't win the major.
Right.
It just means, you know, it's kind of a, I think I can versus I've done this before. And so the only difference is that the guy, the rookie's never been there and never done it, but he still has in his head, I think I can, I think I can. And when he's done, he knows he can because he hits that first tee shot. It doesn't roll off the tee. It goes flying, you know. But I don't think there is such a thing as a real rookie. They just never have experienced this particular venue, which is an eye-opener. But, you know, generally majors come after Ryder Cups because the experience is so intense. And if you can deal with Ryder Cup, then if you do get in contention in a major, it's like second fiddle. It's no biggie.
Well, I have a hard question for you, so you're going to have to think about it. Who was your favorite partner ever to play with in a Ryder Cup?
Oh, Chip Beck by a mile. He was just great. I remember Woozy, and we were playing Woozy and Faldo. Woozy hold it from off the green on one, Faldo hold a bunker shot on four or five or six or something like that, and then Woozy chipped in again on 10, and the crowd was going crazy at the Belfry, that little stadium there, and I can barely hear. We were playing great, and we were still ahead, and Chip Beck, when they were all going bananas, he just was hitting a couple putts, and he's got his head down, and he's half looking at me, and he's saying, "You gotta love it, Zinger, you gotta love it." And I was like, "What? What can you love?" He goes, "They chipped in three times, and we're still one up." And I was like, "Yes, it's true."
Tap that in my veins, Chip Beck.
Well, the great thing about Chip Beck is I didn't have to encourage Chip Beck. He didn't have to encourage me. I didn't have to say, "Come on, let's hang in there." There was none of that. And I didn't want to babysit anybody when I was out there playing. You don't want to have to hold somebody's hand when they're playing. And I just never felt like – Chip just never gave me that feeling that he ever needed a word of encouragement.
You know, something I've found interesting when I look back at teams is, you know, good friends off the golf course, if you look at the Ryder Cup historically, they haven't had a ton of success. And I think about Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka in this Ryder Cup. They played together one time, and they lost in the Ryder Cup as teammates. And they were paired together in the second round at the Tour Championship, and Koepka shot a million, and Dustin didn't play so well. And is there a level of pairing best friends together or not pairing best friends together, considering maybe they play a whole bunch of golf together, they're real comfortable with each other? Because Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth are kind of this new age American team, and it's not like those guys are buddies. It's not like they go out and have dinner during the year on tour, but for whatever reason, it's worked as teammates.
It's all, to me, it's all personality types. If you put two best friends together, it's no recipe for success because their personality types might not work together when they're actually out there in the full-on heat of battle. You hang out with somebody and become good friends because you enjoy their company when you're not in the pressure cooker. So I always went with what I thought were green-like personality types, no kind of red light. If you got a dominant, controlling guy, you better get him with somebody that's kind of steady, supportive, you know? That's just the way it has to be. If you have somebody who's like an influencer or someone who's a relator, like the personality types, he probably goes with just about anybody, you know? So you got to really – I felt like that we took these business principles and applied them to a sporting event, and it worked. But they're all prepared for this in their minds. And the bigger the crowd and the more pressure that's there, I feel like the better they're going to perform. The pressure isn't going to cause them to have their hands shake or anything like that. Choking is in the mind, and it happens, you know, in the motion. That choke, that bailout happens at the last second if you're bailing out. And I just feel like these guys really want to show off when they get in front of that big crowd. Every
right.
putting green, you walk onto every putting green, you might as well be walking into a theater. Isn't that right?
Right,
and,
for
and
sure.
What a better place to show off and get a giant reaction. So if your priority is to show off, I feel it just makes it so much better. I used to stand on the tee shot on the first hole and just think to myself, watch. Wait till they see this. That's how I thought.
Right.
Wait till they see this. I didn't think, oh, my God, I hope I get it over the water. I was like, you ain't seen nothing like this. Whack!
Well, you know, I've watched a lot of these Ryder Cups, and I do, and tell me if I'm wrong here, as again, as my armchair captaincy here. When teams that are successful lose, I sense that a lot of the times captains will break these teams up, you know? And is there a level of letting them play again and go, you know, it was a bad 18 holes, it was a bad day, they ran into a buzzsaw on the other team. Do you feel like captains break up teams that historically have been successful a little too early if they lose one match, maybe on a Friday?
Yeah, but it could be pre-planned by the captain that you're going to play with him in the morning, win, lose, or draw, you're going to play with him in the afternoon. And so some of that's pre-planned. The easiest thing for Furyk, if he is going with the small groups, which I think he is knowing that, you know, I had Mickelson, Justin Leonard, Anthony Kim, and who else was in that pod? Doesn't matter. Those guys knew that they were never going to play with anybody but that group, and it made it easier on me if I had to pull Mickelson out because his hip was bothering me or bothering him and put him with somebody else. So I just felt like and I do feel like it's all pre-planned, win, lose, or draw. If a team loses and you planned on sending them out in the afternoon ahead of time, they're going back out. That's just the way it is. So the captain, one thing the captain has to do is be able to see in the future a little bit, especially on Saturday morning when, you know, you may have a guy that's going to end up playing all five matches if you play him in the afternoon. So you do have to think about some of that stuff.
All right, give me your favorite Ryder Cup moment as a player, and then give me your favorite Ryder Cup moment during 08 as a captain.
Well, the best Ryder Cup moment I ever had as a player was holing the bunker shot so that they didn't celebrate on my watch. No one remembers I made a 10-foot putt on 17 while they were all the Europeans were holding the champagne bottle ready to pop that cork on 17 on me. And I used this redirect strategy on about the 16th hole when I realized it was coming down to my match, the clinching point, and I just I couldn't handle that. I just couldn't handle it. And I remember saying to myself, that, you know, this guy, if you win the clinching point in Europe, you're revered. And I just kept thinking, you know, this guy, he didn't deserve the clinching point. He hadn't been polite today or anything. It was Nicholas Faust, and I really liked the guy, but, man, on the course, he was tough to play with. He cheered if he hit it in the fairway. He'd pump his fist and all that. And I, you know, all I was thinking was, he doesn't deserve it. And all the pressure that I was feeling walking up 16 fairway, it just melted away because I made it about me and him again. And I remember hitting in that bunker left, and I can walking up to the green, and I kept saying, he doesn't deserve it. Took all the pressure off, got in there, hold that shot. And because we were, you know, I just had to make it.
Right.
And delivered some of the most epic high fives ever. Some people ridicule the high five, but I don't know how you can.
the high fives are unbelievable. Listen, in that moment, you're going to whiff on a couple of high fives, Paul. That's just how that goes.
Well, there was a lot of aggression in that high five. And my caddy, he was a little bit smaller guy, and he was going lefty on me like a total clod. And then he had this upward motion, which really made the high five not that – it just didn't look good.
You know what, though? There's never been a great high five in golf history. I mean, really, maybe the only high five that was successfully, I guess, completed was when Spieth made the bunker shot at the Travelers and they kind of jumped into each other and then high five. But most of them are whiffs. Let's be honest. Most of them are complete whiffs on the high five celebration.
Well, almost all golf celebrations are horrendous. If you think about it, the reason Tiger's popular is nothing to do with his golf. It has everything to do with how he celebrates. That's what I think.
Yeah, the celebration started when he made that putt at Sawgrass on 17, and he started running and fist pumping. That was when the legacy began, because I don't think we'd ever really seen anything like that. You know, most guys are running around the greens like Larry Mize, you know, and you're going, what is happening here? It's not a celebration.
Well, how about the hole in one he made at 16 in Phoenix and that reaction?
Unbelievable!
You're just not going to get a better reaction out of a guy. Plus, not only he hits the most great shots. of anybody. He just one spectacular shot after another. For 14 years, we had to see that. And he never made a putt he had to make, or excuse me, never missed a putt he had to make until the 17th hole at against, Hazeltine.
Against Wai Yang, that's right.
That's the only putt I can remember him missing. Maybe, actually, you could go back to 99, way back when he missed about a six-footer or so on 17 against Payne, which is unbelievable. But, yeah, Tiger, he makes putts he has to make. He celebrates. Nobody's, you know, look, if you train yourself to go in there and play golf with no reaction and you show up in character, and my character is to show no emotion, and, you know, that's all fine and dandy. It may help you play better, but dang sure looks boring.
Zing, you know, my favorite celebration in golf history is when Duvall won the singles match in 99, and he started doing the double fist pump around the green, and he just kept doing, you know, those shirts were so baggy, and he's double fist pump, and I don't think we'd ever seen Duvall smile or frown. I mean, it was always just that flat emoji face, and he was running around the green doing that, and he looked like such a golfer, and it was unbelievable. You know, Anthony Kim, great celebrator as well. That's also probably why he was popular.
You know, it's true. And if you look at some of the worst celebrators, like Tom Kite, one of the worst celebrators ever. Like, come on, man, pump that fist. And he'll give it this little kind of a half pump. I don't know.
I'm going to have to do a podcast in the off season about the best and worst celebrators. You didn't
Tiger's
mention
your... the best celebrator ever.
Oh, he's
Mickelson was a poor celebrator. Because he has to do it kind of a odd hand pump or something. He just never gets a lot out of his fist pump. Patrick Reed has to be one of the top celebrators in the game today. But it can be very stoic when he needs to be, like at the Masters. But Tiger's off the chart best celebrator ever.
Yeah, there's a Mount Rushmore of golf celebrators, and it's just one face, and it's Tiger.
Yep.
You didn't mention your favorite moment as a captain in 08. Was there one moment that kind of sticks out in your brain?
Yeah, there was a lot of moments. I think my favorite moment as a captain was when we were getting ready to go out for the big gala dinner, and we were all in our tuxedos, and Boo provided all my favorite moments that week. But I think when he thanked me for all these nice clothes, I think that was probably my favorite moment. He goes, hey, Mr. Zinger, I just want to thank you for all these nice clothes this week.
He said, no problem, I tailored them for you personally.
You know, and he told us the orangutan story too, which was one of the best moments of all times. Watching Hunter Mahan make that putt on 17 in that Ryder Cup on the last day was a really exciting moment for me as a captain as well. And I'm kind of half teasing about Boo, but not really. There was an innocence there about Boo and a real genuine, you know, he's just a genuine guy. He really did thank me for the clothes, and he meant it.
One more break to tell you when it comes to golf equipment. We always want that new driver like the TS2 I was just talking about. You also want a ball that flies further. The one thing that you always forget about is that golf bag of yours. It's time for an upgrade in your golf bag. If you're still carrying around the one from the 1990s, you want to check out the Ogio Cirrus bag. Check out ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on a Cirrus today. Let me tell you something. It is really light. It is easy to carry. It makes walking with your clubs more fun. The weather is getting really nice in a lot of the part of the country. Maybe not so much in the Northeast. But hey, if you live in Arizona, it's time to start walking with your golf clubs like me. Check out ogio.com, the world's best bags. All right, we'll get back to Paul. The Ryder Cup is special in this. You know, there are guys like Paul Azinger, who's played in four Ryder Cups, and Tiger Woods, who's played in a million, and Phil Mickelson, who's played in a million, and Faldo, and Seve, and on down the list. And Rory's going to be there every year. You know, but there's always those guys at every Ryder Cup that are only going to play in one. And you've mentioned Nicholas Faust, who beat you or who played against you. And you
Brett
mentioned
Wetterich or somebody.
Yeah, Wetterich. And we, you know, these players that, you know, win or lose, it's a moment that they're going to remember forever. It's like the Olympics for golf. Of course, you know, we have Olympics in golf now, but I mean, recently, you know, this was a moment for them to play for their country. And again, I mean, it's, you know, these shirts they got that week, you know, the clothes Boo Weekly's talking about, I mean, probably still in the closet, because it is an unbelievable moment as a golfer to get a chance to do this. And I always love the looks in the faces. And you mentioned Hunter Mahan. You know, this is a guy that gets ridiculed a lot of the time for that match against Graham McDowell. That putt he made on 17 was a huge putt. And I mean, and he had to step up and do it, and he made it when he needed to. So it's easy to kind of forget those types of moments and those moments for the players. And I think that's why it feels so much bigger, because you can see it in the players' faces.
Yeah, and my philosophy was to get the players that had been at a lot of Ryder Cups engaged, because I feel like that Ryder Cup was becoming a burden to the American team because they kept losing. And then you also have to realize that there's going to be first-timers there, and you want it to be the greatest experience of their life. When I picked my assistants, I picked Olin first because I just love Olin Brown, and I wanted him to enjoy this experience just as with his family. And it's the same reason I picked Raymond, because I just said, Raymond, you know, I'd love it if you came to one more Ryder Cup and was able to, you know, spend this time with your family and bring the boys, because they're all grown up now and they missed a good part of Ryder Cup. And I did the same thing with Stockton. Bring your boys, bring your wife. Let's share this together. And they all did. And we made it a great experience for everyone involved. And that was kind of my goal. I just wanted this to be about about the players. I felt like I left no stone unturned to try to create what I thought would be the best environment for them to be successful. That was the main thing. But I tried to put the players ahead of everyone. I felt like the Ryder Cup was about everyone but me. And in reality, it was all about me, because I had to look in the mirror, and I didn't want to leave any stone unturned. And I felt like that I way over-prepared for these matches in a way to deliver a message, to keep them organized, to keep them committed and on one page, and to really press the message of preparation and the importance of that. The whole pod system got guys like Furyk and guys like Mickelson and Stuart Sink, repeat players who kept getting swatted. It got them engaged, and they really looked forward to the Ryder Cup, and I think it made it very easy on the rookies to get in there and realize who they were going to play with and that they weren't going to come out of that four-man group. I think they were able to really get comfortable with each other. Stuart Sink said after our Ryder Cup that it was one of the weirdest, because he never saw anyone else on the team hit a shot until his match was over on Sunday. He only saw the guys in his little group. So it was a unique experience, but it was one that was really designed and built around doing everything that I could think of for everybody so it would be a great experience. But in reality, you know, it was about everybody but me, but it was really all about me, dude, because if I didn't do everything I could for them, I would have felt like I failed them.
And Zinger, I mean, are you bummed you haven't been a captain again? I mean, I know you're one of the more passionate people I've ever met about mm-hmm. this event. Is it a bummer that you either not accepted a role or haven't been asked to do it again? I mean, is it something you would have liked to do or still want to do again?
Well, I lobbied to do it after 2008, and the answer I got back was, see, because I wanted to take the flag to Europe. I knew we'd been getting beat, and I wanted to take the flag to Europe. I might have done 2 6-man teams and let them practice in 3-man groups, you know, something like that. Now I got 2 6-man teams, but I don't know what I would have done. Quite frankly, it probably wouldn't have been the same, but it dang sure would have been committed. And I just said, I want to carry the flag to Europe if you want me to carry the flag to Europe. And the answer I got was, well, so, you know, Zinger, we got more captains than we have Ryder Cups. And that resonated with me. And I said, well, that's fair. I get that. Then they picked Watson again. Like, what the heck?
Wait a minute here. He was already a captain.
They picked Davis again.
Well, I know the players would love it if you were back out there. I don't know. I don't know if there's an opportunity there, but I know they'd be pumped up about it.
I wouldn't do it at this point in my life. I'm too disconnected from the players, and I don't think it would fit for me. I certainly don't want to go to anywhere like that as an assistant. And you know, I'm still kind of media too, so I don't mind, you know, coming in there from a media perspective. And if I'm ever calling a Ryder Cup, I'd be there to help the American team as best I could and then go on the air and try to sound neutral.
Yeah, you're talking up the European team with your fingers crossed. If you, I'll ask you a final couple questions and I'll let you go. You know, looking at this team, there's a lot of young players. We've already talked about Tiger and Phil. Who would you pair with Tiger this next week? I mean, is there somebody in particular you're looking at that you would put with Tiger Woods?
I'd like to see Tiger and Phil play. Just as a revenge match a little bit. I think I'd love to see them get one chance, but they're not going to be in the same pod. So if they're going with the pod system, that's never going to happen. But I don't know who – I would put Tiger with people that are enjoyable, somebody maybe that he needs to encourage a little bit. I'd probably stick him with, let's see.
Bryson seems like the answer. At least it looks like that'll be the answer. But I love the Finau pick as well.
I like Finau, and I like Bryson for Tiger. And maybe get one more veteran to put in that group with him and let those four guys go have at it. Because Bryson and Finau are a great pairing, too. I think they'd be a terrific pairing. But I don't think America's going to have any trouble finding a spot for Tiger Woods in this Ryder Cup. And, you know, somebody he's familiar with, somebody that's not a real threat to what he's trying to do out there, somebody Tiger can share philosophy and strategy with freely. And that's what I would do.
Zinger, I'm going to say this right now. With the way Tiger's playing going in, I mean, the 62 at the BMW, and just for people at home, we're recording this on a Saturday. So at this time, Tiger is currently tied for the lead at the Tour Championship, but he's been playing great golf. This is the perfect storm for Tiger. I mean, he's got a couple of young guys that are going to be fired up to play with him. He can kind of lead this team as a veteran presence. He's going to be excited to be back out there. This might be the Ryder Cup where Tiger goes out there and goes 4-0, you know, or 4-1-0 or something like that, because I feel like this is as good an opportunity as he's ever had to, A, showcase his own game, show off a little bit, as you say, and B, have some young people there that are not going to be intimidated to play alongside him. That's the new age golfer. They're not scared to be out there with him in that moment. They're going to be excited about it, I think.
Well, yeah, but he's not as scary either, let's face it.
It's a good point.
He was, you know, the great thing, though, now is that Tiger is not walking around in some ceremonial end to his career here. He's a living, walking miracle at the moment. To have a fuse back and then be able to come back and play this kind of golf at this level probably surprises him more than it does you and I. But I think he's become a much easier pairing because he's not quite as dominant or scary. And these young guys are used to maybe seeing him on TV at the end of his career, but they realize how human Tiger is too. I mean, he dealt with the worst emotion ever, and that's the emotion of shame. And that'll humble a guy. You know, Tiger used to be the kind of guy that he was uncomfortable if you were comfortable with Tiger. Now he's uncomfortable if you're not comfortable with him. And that's different, you know. And so when you're putting a guy in Ryder Cup pairings, it's uncomfortable if you're comfortable with him versus uncomfortable if you're not comfortable with him. That's just a different teammate right there. And Tiger's going to be a great teammate for whoever he plays with this week. And it doesn't hurt that he's playing well.
Zinger, if you were the captain, we would have a Tiger-Phil pairing once again. Revenge. Revenge at its best. Hey, I appreciate the time. Give me your pick really quick, and I know you're probably going to pick the United States, but give me – actually, you know, I'll give you four options here. I'll give you a European route, an American route, a really close Ryder Cup that the Europeans win, or a really close Ryder Cup that the Americans win.
I think it's always fairly close, and I do believe the United States team is the better team, and although – six of the, let's see, six, five, four or five Americans Ryder Cup players are dead at the bottom so far after two rounds of the Tour Championship. But I don't know. I think now's the time for guys like Koepka and Mickelson who are at the bottom to start thinking about this Ryder Cup and get ready. But I think the U.S. will win a tight Ryder Cup because this is America's generational pedigree that's showing up. And these are the best players that we've had in a long time all make the team. Someone adjusted that selection process since I put it together, and they truly have the best players that America has to offer here. This is our chance for redemption. This is our time.
Yeah, first time since 93 if they do it on European soil. And last question, and I'll let you go, Zing. If say it's tied going into Sunday, you're making that singles lineup, who is your last match out? Is it a veteran like Tiger, or are you gonna put those guys kind of mixed in?
The last thing I would do is put Tiger last.
Okay.
Because that opens yourself up to a whole herd of criticism. I would get Tiger, and also putting Tiger out first is a mistake too, because they're always going to put their best players out first. And, you know, like you said, anybody can beat anybody. Every captain puts Tiger out first match. Every captain. And I would never do that. I would put Tiger out second or third match and maybe let him anchor in the first 2 days, but come Sunday, I would send Tiger out in a place where I felt like the Ryder Cup could be decided.
Gotcha.
And usually that starts at the seventh match, because it can come down to 7, 8, or 9 pretty easily, but generally the Ryder comes down to 9, 10, 11. Only once has it come down to the last match. And so I would never put my best player at the end. I would put somebody there that I felt could really handle that pressure. But I would never waste Tiger on a last match, and I'm not spending him early because if he loses, what's that going to do
exactly.
for Europe?
Team goes, this guy went down. What are we going to do?
It's not what it does to us. It's what it's going to do to them.
Oh, I got you. That makes more sense. And their fans.
It ain't going to hurt us if Tiger loses, but it's going to help them if he loses. And I just think Tiger needs to be in a position where he doesn't set the momentum if he loses. That's my philosophy. Don't put him first, and definitely don't put him last on Sunday. I'd put him around 8th on Sunday, 8th or 9th.
Man, that is some in-depth analysis. See, that's why you have a captain that won a Ryder Cup on the podcast. Paul, I always appreciate it. You're the man.
Hey.
I love you, buddy. And I will.
I love you too.
We'll have to have you on sometime, maybe early next year when we kind of start to get closer and closer to this U.S. Open. We get to go to Pebble Beach next year again. I guess our wives are going to have to come with us again too.
Oh my gosh, are we going to be in that tap room?
the tap room for like 4 dinners. That's exactly right. That's Paul Azinger. He was the 2008 winning Ryder Cup captain and one of my favorite podcast guests. Thanks again, man.
See you, buddy.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
A big thanks to Paul Azinger for jumping on and giving us that great insight. He is one of the great minds around Ryder Cups. Love talking to him about everything that involves this event. I'm excited about it. A reminder, the mid-AM, 4 to 6 on Wednesday, 4 to 6 on Thursday. Those are Eastern. It'll be on FS1. DVR it and watch it. Amateur golf, some of the best viewing in the world. And then we roll right into the Ryder Cup starting Friday morning. I'll be at home tweeting at Shane Bacon throughout the weekend, so if you want to check that out, do that if you want. You can respond to me. You can make fun of me. All of that stuff is appreciated. Ogio.com, Titleist.com, check out the new driver. We will be back next week to react to the Ryder Cup. Hope you guys have a great week and enjoy the festivities from France.